Hello and welcome to another edition of Inside Network Marketing. This is June 21st, 2012. I believe this is show number 19, and this is Len Clements, the host of Inside Network Marketing. And I want to just apologize right off for the background noise. You're probably hearing my overhead fan and my air conditioner, which will be going on pretty much throughout the show because it is 108 degrees here in Las Vegas. So I believe me, I sweat for you guys, but not literally. The subject I want to talk about is one that's actually been a real thorn in my side for about, well, I'll tell you, since June 24th, 2009. You'll know why in a minute. But most recently, there has been a lot of propaganda put out there bashing binary compensation plans. And the case that's being made against it is just so logically, mathematically, legally wrong. I mean, from a very pragmatic analysis, from a very factual standpoint, they're just wrong. And it's driving me nuts. Now, understand, I do comp plan design for a living. In the about 19 years that I've done this, I say about 80% of the plans that I've designed have been binary unilevel hybrids. The other 20% have been straight unilevels. So I have no problem with unilevel plans. I have no problem with breakaway plans. They're kind of obsolete nowadays, but I mean, there's nothing wrong about them. They're just not really in favor nowadays. But the only thing I'd ever tell anyone to avoid as far as just a general category of comp plan is an Aussie two-up, because I think they're borderline frauds. Matrix plans have an historical, horrible track record, so I wouldn't recommend them. Yeah, so it's either unilevel or a binary unilevel hybrid. Now, the straight binary, without the unilevel aspect, which is essentially the matching bonus, wouldn't really recommend them either. I don't care for them. I don't like them for a lot of the reasons that all of these people I'm about to name are bashing binaries for. But the straight binary is virtually obsolete today. I can think of one company that I would still consider like a straight binary. Virtually every other one is a binary unilevel hybrid, which means almost all of the criticisms that's being heaped on binaries today doesn't apply to any of the binaries out there. I'm going to go through this point by point and basically just pick apart every one of these arguments. And so, but again, I want to make it very, very clear. I'm not saying this to favor any particular company. I'm not going against companies that use another type of plan. Every plan has pros and cons. They have their advantages and their disadvantages. And the binary has advantages and disadvantages. But if you're going to make a case for what the disadvantages are, at least have a case. Don't just make crap up, because in some cases you're going to see here that's exactly what's happening. Now, what I'm going to use as a basis, just sort of a starting point, is an article that was created back on June 24th, 2009, by a gentleman by the name of John Godsich. Now, Mr. Godsich is apparently a very high-profile marketing guru. I believe he's a distributor for Zengo. Now, I am going to kind of throw Zengo into this, because Zengo on a corporate level, not renegade irresponsible distributors, but on a corporate level on their corporate website, also makes a case for why every other type of compensation plan except for the one they use, which is unilevel, is bad, including the binary. And the case they make against the binary actually is ridiculous, which, again, I'll get to that in a minute. So if you're going to put that out there, then you're going to get on the list, and I'm going to explain why you're wrong. But before I do that, please understand, I like Zengo. Of the 2,000-some-odd MLM companies out there, if I were to make a list of all the ones I would say you should at least consider joining, it would probably be a short list of 40 or 50, but Zengo would be on it. Perfectly good company, and their compensation plan is perfectly fine. It's a unilevel, perfectly fine. My only issue is the argument they make against binaries, all right? So I make that very, very clear. And then I'm also going to play you some audio bites of the case that Blake Mallon over at Visalis makes against binaries, which he did on a very popular YouTube video. In fact, I believe he's about over 50,000 views on it so far. Jeff Olson, who also has a video out there that's actually being promoted by Lou Abbott. That's where most of the views are going to. Lou Abbott actually did a piece called Bottom Line on MLM Binary Compensation Plans, which has over 23,000 views on YouTube, where he cuts to Jeff Olson's case against binary plans. I will say this, Lou actually does present the more balanced case, but still overall it's a case he makes that why the binary plan is, quote, unfair and, quote, unquote, bad for the industry. So it's an overall negative case. But I do give him credit, at least he tried to create some kind of balance to it, but there's at least some basis for fact, at least what he presents, but the others, not so much. So again, I want to make this very, very clear. Nothing against any of these people personally. Visalis, obviously, very good, successful company. Jeff Olson just started a new company, perfectly fine compensation plan. My only issue is the argument they make against binaries, all right? So let's compartmentalize here so no one takes this personally or anything or says I'm bashing their company or anything like that. That's the only thing that I'm criticizing here. All right. I guess from a kind of a 10,000-foot view, I really want to just criticize the concept of bashing binary compensation plans in general, or for that matter, any type of compensation plan category. I mean, it's kind of like saying you should avoid Fords, or Fords are unfair or bad for the industry. Well, a brand new Ford F-150 truck, a 67 Mustang, or a 1925 Model T. You know, which one are you talking about? They're all Fords. There are literally hundreds of binary compensation plans out there right now with myriad variations to them. So to bash an entire category of compensation plan is kind of nonsensical on its face, because you can change the rules of any kind of plan to compensate for the negatives, to enhance the positives, and to make it middle or front or back weighted or whatever you want to do to it. It's the rules you apply to the plan, not so much the overall plan category. So I don't really get why we're even doing that at all here in this business. But let's jump into this. John Gotsich wrote an article. He's an entrepreneur and expert in business systems development. He refers to himself as in this article. 13 reasons why binaries do not work for MLM. All right. Reason number one, according to Mr. Gotsich, of the 13 reasons why binaries do not work for MLM is that historically, I'm quoting here. By the way, understand, I'm not quoting out of context. Okay? I mean, this is the entire quote that he presents. Historically, binaries have been short-lived except for USANA, which did not start out as a binary. End quote. Okay, so he's making a case here that binaries are very short-lived, but he implies that, well, USANA hasn't been short-lived, obviously, but they didn't start out as a binary, which kind of implies like maybe they only became binary recently or in the last few years or something, right? Okay, well, USANA was a breakaway plan for about 1 year, and a binary plan for the last 18 years. Longevity Network, the one that I was with, for about 10 years, full time, back in the 90s and then early O's, they were binary for 12 years. And technically, have never went out of business. They've still been going in South Korea, actually have relaunched here in the United States, so actually, they've been a binary for 18 years. Zhri, 4 years, still going, almost probably pushing 5 years now. Max, 5 years. Agile, 7 years. Mona V, 7 years. Vima, 8 years. Isagenix, I think, is almost 10 years old now. Synergy, they're over 12 years old. Manatech, almost 18 years old. Their plan today is vaguely a binary, but most of that time it was definitely a binary. Market America, 20 years. Okay, 20 years, two decades. But understand, according to Mr. Gotsich, historically, binaries have been short-lived. A few years ago, there was a consortium of leaders with this one particular company that had a breakaway compensation plan, a very well-known company, that hired me to help them make a case to their management why they should change their plan to a binary unilevel hybrid. As part of that research, they did a nice PowerPoint presentation and did everything. Ultimately, they didn't choose to change their plan and have recently went out of business. But anyway, the point is that part of that research, I found how many companies have switched their plans just in the last few years from either something else to a binary or from a binary away from that to something else. Now, I know there are exceptions out there that I probably don't have on this list. So, you know, I mean, there's maybe one or two out there besides this one, but Pixingo switched to a unilevel from a binary about a year ago. And again, I'm sure there are others out there I'm missing, but for every one you find that I missed, I'll guarantee I'll find another one that went to a binary, which include USANA, Longevity Network. They actually launched the first few months as a unilevel. Legacy for Life went from a unilevel to a binary. Technically, New Vision They started a sister company called Vima. New Vision was Unilevel. Vima Binary. Vima eventually absorbed New Vision. That's a switch. Unilevel to Binary. Gano Excel was a Unilevel, now Binary. Forever Green was a Unilevel, now Binary. Jri, Unilevel to Binary. Ameriplan, Unilevel to Binary. Enlighten, Unilevel to Binary. Changes back in 1995. And Pro Image, the two companies that was, I think Pro Image launched in 02, that Scotty Paulson launched, were both compressed Unilevels. He was a huge advocate of the compressed Unilevel, you know, like with the 40% on the second level type of thing. In fact, Scotty and I got in a little tiff back then because I wrote an article essentially exposing why the compressed Unilevel wasn't as good as they said it was. And but again, I'll get to this at the end of this whole rant, but I know there's nothing wrong with criticizing a compensation plan, again, as long as you actually have a case and you make a very pragmatic, logical, rational case against it. And I did that against the compressed Unilevel. I've also written one against Aussie Tulips. You can find them in the article section at marketwaveinc.com. But the point is that he was a very staunch advocate of the compressed Unilevel. Well, he recently, a few years ago, started Rev Energy, Rev NRG, and it's a binary. So one of the biggest advocates of Unilevel compensation plans now is operating under a binary compensation plan. And I can go on, but I think you get the point of this. The binary plan, unlike what some other people like Jeff Olson has said, is not going out of favor. It's actually more popular than ever, and it is certainly not short-lived by just evidence of how many companies have been around for so many years and decades that have binary compensation plans, including some like Mona V that at one point almost hit $1 billion in annual sales with it. So, number two of John Gossett's 13 reasons why binaries are bad. Binaries have had problems, I'm quoting again, with regulators, often drawing huge fines or settlements. Example, Big Smart, $5 million. End quote. No company has ever been legally challenged due to their binary compensation plan by any local, state, or federal official in the United States. Ever. Okay? He is just utterly wrong. Now, what has happened is, back in the 90s, primarily, a lot of illegal schemes, or ones that were deemed to be, the binary plan was their plan of choice. So yeah, a lot of illegal schemes back then happened to be binaries. Doesn't mean all binaries were illegal schemes. Like in the 70s, most illegal pyramid schemes were using a matrix plan. Doesn't mean all matrix plans were illegal, obviously. I mean, Melaleuca's doing just fine with one. So what happened was, and how we know that regulators have no problem with a binary compensation plan is because of companies like Jewelway, Destiny Telecom, TravelMax. I mean, these are companies where a temporary restraining order was issued against them, TRO. They were shut down temporarily. They had to make a whole bunch of changes ordered by the court. The court agreed that they've made those changes. They sign off and agree to make these changes, whatever. Then the TRO is lifted. And in this case, when the smoke cleared and all three of these companies were allowed back in business and the judge had approved all of their new form that they were in, all three of them were still binary compensation plans. The binary plan had nothing whatsoever to do with these actions. It was what they were doing with the binary plan. In every single case, it had to do with people buying product just to get more positions in the plan to earn higher incomes. Okay, making a token purchase for product just to achieve more commissions, that's indicative of an illegal pyramid scheme in any type of compensation plan. You could do that in a breakaway. I mean, in fact, most front loads, buying product just to qualify for higher ranks, occurs in breakaway plans. And that's what got New Skin in trouble back around 92, 93. It's what shut down Equinox back in the 90s, which was a breakaway plan. So the point is, there's never been a legal challenge. Big Smart, which he lists as an example, Big Smart sold shopping malls, online shopping malls. We had all these affiliate relationships with a bunch of little resellers. And the vast majority of revenue and commissions were not from the products purchased through the mall, but from the sale of the web mall itself, the online mall, which means from the sale of a sales aid that only distributors would buy. There was no value to anyone outside the business opportunity to purchase the web mall for like $495, whatever it was. That's why they were deemed a pyramid scheme. Had nothing whatsoever to do with the category of compensation plan that they had. This is easily verifiable, by the way. 5-minute Google search on Big Smart. You can prove this, which I have a hard time believing Mr. Gossett didn't do, but give him the benefit of the doubt. We'll just assume this was an honest mistake. Number three, binaries are often built anonymously through automated systems that do not lead to the development of personal relationships. I'm going to jump to number 10 here, because it kind of shows the illogic of this, which and how Mr. Gossage kind of defeats his own case. And by the way, Olson, Malin, all those other guys, I'll get to them in a minute too. They've just not made any of these arguments, so that's why I haven't gotten to them yet. And number 10, Mr. Gossage says, automated sponsoring systems in binaries wind up giving a bad name to legitimate organizations who use automated systems within the confines of a sound compensation plan. The quote-unquote good distributors suffer from guilt by association. So understand, in number 3, binaries are bad because they are built anonymously through automated systems that don't lead to personal relationships. But in number 10, automated sponsoring systems that don't lead to personal relationships are just fine if you're in the type of plan that his company uses. You don't have a plan. it doesn't make any sense. It's completely contradictory. And not only that, most binaries are not built anonymously through automated systems. Some of them are. Some people use systems like that, automated online systems, but they do that in Unilevel plans too, which Mr. Gossage apparently just confessed to. It's okay, I guess, if it's in Unilevel. In fact, some of the biggest automated sponsoring systems ever, Concord Group, the Taproot system, things like that, they were built in Unilevel compensation plans. So what he's talking about here, again, has nothing remotely to do with binary compensation plans. It's a downline building system that could be applied to any type of compensation plan. It's not at all specific to binaries, and in fact is most commonly used in Unilevel plans. Number 4 of John Gossage's 13 reasons why binary plans are bad for the industry. Quote, in a binary, the company is betting against the field. The very premise of the binary comp plan is that distributors do not qualify. In fact, binaries live off of quote-unquote breakage, which is all the percentages written into a comp plan but not paid out because distributors do not qualify. This money is kept by the company. Now, binaries, almost all of them now today, have a 50% cap on their payout. Now, I'm going to get a little technical here, but kind of bear with me. I'll try to make this as simple as possible. Okay, go back into the 1990s. We know, because they're publicly traded, that USANA was topping out at about 46% payout on wholesale. Manitech, which is publicly traded, they've topped out at 48%. And this was a few years ago when they were really using a binary comp plan. Market America used to be publicly traded, topped out at about 47%. Longevity was private, but most of the company was under me, so I kind of knew what their payout was, and it was fluctuating between 48 to 52%. Call it 50%. So here's 4 binary plans that all paid out at or just under 50%. None of them had caps because they didn't need a cap because they all paid out 20% approximately of the weak leg on the first $5,000 in volume during the week, $1,000 per center. Longevity actually paid 10% but had 100% match everybody qualified for. So same thing. They're all paying out about 20% of the first $5,000 in the weak leg. They didn't need caps because that's just where their plans sort of naturally, organically topped out. They were just designed to pay just a little under 50%. Well, then came companies like Synergy, Isagenix, you know, a whole bunch of companies after them that said, we're going to pay you, I think Isagenix once said, $50,000 per week per center. Now, wait a minute. USANA, Market America, Longevity, they're all going to pay you $1,000 a week per center. 20% of the weak leg on the first 5,000. This company's going to pay you 50,000. Those companies that are paying 1,000 a week per center, they're all paying at or just under 50%. How can you pay 50 times more and still pay about 50%? Because, of course, Isagenix put a 50% cap on their payout, just as Zri has, Agile has, Mona V has, all of them have. So how can you pay out the same 50% but pay 50 times more? Well, you can't. There's a thing called binary creep. It's actually can happen to any type of plan, but it's much more prominent and pronounced, I should say, in a binary plan where the bigger the company gets, the higher the payout goes. I've had clients come to me before where they said, Len, when we had 1,000 distributors, we're paying 35%. We got to 5,000, we started paying 50%. Now we're up to 10,000, we're paying, you know, 80% because they didn't design their plan right. Well, these plans that have these 50% caps that pay out $5,000, $10,000, $25,000, $50,000 a week, they can't pay 5, 10, 25, 50 times more and still pay the same 50%. They're all paying out about 50%. And we know that most of these larger companies have hit that cap because of the way that they've cut pay. There was a period a few years ago during Isogenesis' fastest growth phase where I tracked it. Over an 18-month period, they cut pay 6 times. Agile, you know, made a big deal out of busting their cap, and they had to cut their matching bonus. I've identified 11 different ways that MonaV has cut pay throughout their history. Now, some people are going to come back and go, oh, no, Len, they didn't do that. They only cut pay twice. Blah, blah, blah. Understand, if you change your BVs or CVs to make that ratio to wholesale smaller, that's a pay cut. If you increase your qualification so less people qualify for certain things, that's a pay cut. If you eliminate a bonus that pays 5% and add a bonus that pays 10%, but only a tenth as many people qualify for the 10% one, that's a pay cut. What most of these companies are doing is they pay out the matching bonus off of all the commissions that are earned, but the basis that those commissions earn, like say, we're going to pay you 10% match on all the commissions, the weak leg commissions of all the people that earn them, they're going to lower that basis. So you don't really see it. Like in MonaV's case, they used to pay 20% down 7 generations. That was their matching bonus. Now it's an undetermined floating percentage that changes from week to week because now they can cut it and you don't see it cut. It doesn't go from 20 to 18 to 15. And I know from a pretty reliable inside source I had there a couple of years ago, at one point, and maybe up now, I don't know, but at one point it was down to about 5.5%. From 20% to 5.5%. They'd cut their matching bonus by almost 3/4. So, and by the way, if you cut it more than once, that counts as 2 separate pay cuts. So, yeah, they've cut pay a lot because, and this isn't even really a bad thing, it just means they hit their cap. So, you know, they just can't afford to pay anymore and stay in business. That's, putting a cap on a plan like that is a healthy thing, right? Keeps you viable. Now, knowing that, then who cares about what breakage might be in the plan? 50% is 50%. They're paying out a very healthy 50%. You know, USANA, Manitech, Market America, I mean, like I said, two of them are still publicly traded. We can see out they're paying out in the mid-40s. Those are very good payouts. So if this breakage was causing their overall payout to go way down, like into the 30% or something, I could see why people that make this claim might have a case. But you can have a plan with no breakage that pays 50% or a plan with a lot of breakage that pays 50%. They're both still paying 50% of every wholesale dollar back to the field in commission. In fact, Zango says, and this is in their corporate literature on their website, in their compensation plan section, quote, commissions are usually restricted up to a certain amount. Now, there's only two things they could be talking about here, because it's a little ambiguous. They're either talking about this 50% cap, which would be really ironic considering Zango has a 50% cap. They're a unilevel, but they guarantee no breakage. They're always going to pay out that full 50%, which is good. But the point is, don't bash other companies for having a 50% cap if you have a 50% cap. Now, what they might mean here is that each position in a binary, where you have one position, one circle, let's say, on the chart, and you're all the commissions from all that volume below you, and it is limited. You can hit a certain ceiling. They only pay you on so much of that weak leg volume, and eventually it stops because no plan can pay infinitely. I don't care what kind of plan it is. And we'll get to that in a minute, too. But the point is that they say, well, even on a weekly basis, they limit the amount you can earn. They can say, at this rank, you can't earn more than this dollar amount. Well, yeah, but that's per position. What every person who's made this case always seems to forget to mention is as soon as you've hit that ceiling, as soon as you've, quote-unquote, maxed out, that's what they refer to it as, that position in the binary, you get another position. You're not stuck there forever. Okay, you bump your head on the ceiling, they give you another position. Most plans today will allow you to put that position above your original position, so the re-entry position has one maxed out leg to start with. So you only have to build one of the two legs. And then that position has that same limit. As soon as you hit it, you get another position. They always forget to mention the part where that number of positions with these limits on them are unlimited, thus meaning there is no limit. Number 5. This is John Gotsuch talking again. In a binary, leaders build power legs as fast as possible. They're controlling spillover in a way to benefit them at the expense of their downline, thus making the appeal of spillover a myth at best and at worst an outright lie. Well, that's Mr. Gotsuch's take on this concept of power legs. Okay? The leaders are controlling them at the expense of the little guy. Here's Blake Mallon's take on the concept of power legs.
Are moving on. I mean, Let's face it, the promise of the just get in, we'll stick a leg underneath you, and you only have to build one, it's a hollow promise. And at the end of the day, when it comes to that model, we know that anywhere from 90 to 99% of people don't have that privilege of the power leg. So they end up going out there and building.
Here is Lou Abbott's position on power legs as they refer to binary compensation plans.
And then there's power legs. Power legs is when someone strong says, I'm building a real strong leg, I'm keeping everybody on the outside, and so you only have to build one leg. I believe that's turned into that whole power leg concept, not a pro, but a con. All right, so you're going to see it on this list too.
And then finally, here is at least part one of Jeff Olson's comment on power legs.
You have a power leg, you have a pay leg. And what happens, anybody who knows anything about the direct sales industry, and anybody who knows anything about binaries, okay, would never join a company unless they're in the power leg. They got to get inserted in the power leg, because they know that you can get inserted in the power leg, and they demand to be put there, and then all they have to do is build their pay leg. So they only have to build one leg.
Okay, I should probably explain here what someone's referring to when they refer to a power leg is a situation where someone says anyone who comes in after you is going to be placed in your downline in a straight line, one below the other, and you are obligated to put one or two of your first few people into that leg as well, too, to help perpetuate it. Okay, it's called a power leg. As I said, some of those popular and largest power legs that have ever been built in the history of this industry were employed in unilevel compensation plans. So this is by no means specific to the binary plan at all. In fact, they didn't really work and eventually fell apart in unilevel plans, regardless of how big they got, because, as I'll explain more in detail later, it costs you a lot of money to build in depth, potentially, in a unilevel plan. Because it only pays down a finite number of levels. You would never want to put someone in a straight line down 50 levels if your plan only paid down 6 levels. So it's most of that volume is going out of your pay range. It works perfectly in a binary plan, which is why they are somewhat popular in plans. I mean, many, many people don't use power legs. I haven't built a power leg in years, actually, but they are somewhat popular. And it works great because it doesn't cost you anything to put people in depth. It's just the total volume in the leg. It doesn't make any difference what level it falls on. So putting people in a straight line works in a binary plan, and it doesn't really work in a unilevel. And how can it be a quote-unquote power leg if, according to Mr. Mallon, 99% of the people are not in that leg? It's overrated because you don't really get it. It's a power leg, but it's only made up of the other 1% of the people. And as Lou Abbott said, if someone strong, that was his words, says they're going to put you in a power leg, well, by their nature, being a strong builder, by definition, that's someone who brings in a lot of people. So why is it hard to believe that when they tell you they're going to put you in a power leg, they really are going to put you in a power leg and put a bunch of people underneath you because they're a strong builder? And if Jeff Olson really believes that only those knowledgeable of binaries are going to, quote-unquote, demand to be placed at the bottom of a power leg, then this implies they work. Understand, you don't get placed at the top of a power leg. You get placed at the end of it. And then they say anyone who comes in after you is going to go in your downline. For that to be so enticing to a knowledgeable distributor, you're not going to go at the end of a power leg that's not a power leg, that didn't build, that never got any traction, that has hardly no one above you that's been put in by this person promising you the power leg. That would only be attractive to you if this person has successfully built a power leg previous to you joining, and you have the expectation it's going to continue to go right on down the line and give you a power leg. So the very essence of someone demanding to be in a power leg validates its existence and its effectiveness. The logic gets even worse here. Hang on.
Every in their pay leg, they prey on the people who know nothing about the industry, who know nothing about binaries, who they bring in. They'll never bring somebody who knows nothing and put them in a power leg. Never do that. They always put them in a pay leg because they don't know better. And those people have to build two legs versus this person has to build one leg. So the person who knows everything, been around for years, has databases, influence, is seasoned, been doing it for 5, 10 years, they do have to do half as much as the person who doesn't know, who's out of their comfort zone, who for the very first time, who's dreaming to be like you, but they have to do twice as much as you do because they just didn't know. You can't tell me that's not fair, and you've got to admit that's how it's done. It's the big secret. But the wrong problem, that secret is, the people in the pay leg, the death know, or building two legs, they eventually realize that they're not in a power leg. They can't even get a powerful network marketer to get an organization because they got to get in that power leg. And so they realize, whoa, I wasn't put in a power leg. And so what they do is they leave you to go to another company where they now become the person who says, I got to be in the power leg. So in essence, you've got people who don't know being put into pay legs who eventually leave and go into power legs to bring people into pay legs who do the same thing. So it's just this revolving door, and there's no stability there. And it's been proven over and over and over what I'm saying. I'm just saying we're not playing games like that.
Yes, it's been proven over and over that there's no stability in the 20-year-old binary that Market America uses, or the 18-year-old binary that Manatech uses, or the 18-year-old binary that USANA uses, et cetera, et cetera. And let me get this straight. So according to Blake Mallon, 99% of the people don't go into the power leg, but according to Jeff Olson, only strong builders with a lot of experience will go into power legs. But all the people that don't know any better are going to go into the weak leg, which I would think would be the large majority of distributors. I mean, they're the ones that these experienced leaders are preying on. So the weak leg has most of the distributors. The power leg has all the big leaders, but it's a smaller leg because 99% don't join it. And if all of this is true, how does a power leg ever get started? I mean, understand, the only possible scenario how a power leg can get started is they go to someone and say, if you join me, I'll put you in my right leg. I'm going to build a power leg there. Everyone who comes in after you is going to go in a straight line. It's got to start someplace, right? So if it starts that way, why is there some weird rule that no one in your weak leg can do that? Why can't anyone do that, since that's the way every single power leg in history's ever been started, with zero people in the leg to start with? Any branch anywhere off the tree, someone can decide, I'm going to go build a power leg. And if it's only the few experienced leaders that get in them, where are they putting their people? Cross-line to them over in their sponsor's other leg? No, they're putting them in their downline, which means their upline that got in, that got promised a power leg, gets an even bigger leg. This whole case of how power legs are somehow bad is illogical on multiple levels. The truth is, power legs are sometimes built in binaries. They're not built very often. A few people will do them, and they usually have some success with them. And again, anybody, anywhere, including all those people in your weak leg, can create a power leg too. You only have to build two legs in a binary, and even if a power leg works, it builds one of the two legs, and it's hard to rationalize how that's a bad thing for the person who receives that sales volume. Now, this also kind of dovetails into the issue of spillover. And in a unilevel plan, understand that you really, actually in a unilevel and a stair-step breakaway, any kind of width-oriented plan, you get hardly any spillover at all. For those of you who are new to the business, spillover means your upline sponsors someone and places them in your downline. Okay, you wouldn't even get this in one leg, because like I said, it doesn't really work in a unilevel. In a little unilevel, you typically have to build several legs, and to qualify for the higher ranks in the plan. And they pay you down a finite number of levels. Let's say, for example, 7 levels. You might get paid down, 8% down 7 levels or something like that. Well, would you put someone on your 8th level? Well, of course not. They and their entire organization would be completely out of your pay range. Now, I know they got infinity bonuses, generational bonuses, but again, at some point, they only pay down so far and they have to stop. So if you sign someone up and even put them on your 2nd level, potentially they're going to build an organization to where a whole bunch of their volume is going to be on your 8th level that, had you put them on your 1st level, would have been on your 7th level. So you're going to get paid on 6 levels of their organization if they're on your 1st level. You only get paid on 5 levels of their organization if you put them on your 2nd level. If it pays down 7 levels, you put them on your 6th level, you only get paid on 1 level of their organization. It's just basic math. The deeper you put them in a unilevel, the more it can potentially cost you. Now, people will say, well, yeah, Len, but you have less attrition, because if you build deep in a unilevel, it kind of locks them in, because your upline should put a few people in your downline to help increase the retention rate that way. And my response is, exactly. That's why it's a good thing in a binary. Isn't it interesting how spillover is a bad thing in a binary, creates this welfare state, but in a unilevel, somehow spillover is a good thing because it helps increase retention. Well, it increases retention in a binary too. The only difference is it doesn't potentially cost you anything and in fact will make you more money by building in depth in a binary, and it will potentially cost you money by building in depth in a unilevel. Wouldn't it be great if you can get the same benefit, that retention-enhancing benefit, without it potentially costing you any money? In a unilevel, if I put someone 500 levels deep, you will never get paid on them. I don't care if they have an infinity bonus. Okay, Mr. Webster and I have a very different definition of infinity than a lot of MLM companies. Infinity bonuses pay down to a certain point and then stop. You get blocked. And the bigger your organization gets, the more people right under you, who also then have bigger organizations, qualify for that infinity bonus and block it. So you only get an infinity bonus in the beginning when you have a short downline and you don't need it. When you have a big deep downline and you need it, you've got this layer of people underneath you who are also qualifying for it and blocking you from it. So if next time someone tells you, oh, I'm in a unilevel, and yeah, you can get paid on someone 500 levels deep, ask them this question. What are the odds of someone on your first level with a 499 level deep downline not also qualifying for that infinity bonus, just like you did? Pretty slim. So again, no, you can't get paid on them. But in a binary, again, levels make no difference. Someone on your 500th level makes you just as much money as if you put them on your first level. It's just total volume in the leg. But if you put them 500 levels deep, you've just helped 499 other people make money. There's a huge benefit to building in depth as opposed to width. Now, and again, in a unilevel, like I said, you've got to build several legs across your front line. A binary is only two. In a unilevel, you get no help from your upline at all. That they criticize binaries like, oh, you got to build two legs. Your upline builds just one of them for you. Right. And in a unilevel, they build none of the 6 or 10 legs or 15 legs that you mean. None of 10 is worse than one of 2. I'm going to move on here. Otherwise, this is going to take hours. And I'm quoting again here now from John Gossage's 13 Reasons Why Binary Plans Are Bad for the Industry. Quote, binaries pay out on your weak leg, not on your strong or power leg, which is technically true. Each week you have two legs, the one with a lesser amount of volume in it, that's the one that the commission is based on. But before I respond to this, let's get Blake Mallon's take on this issue of only getting paid on the weak leg.
Our two organizations, one of which, the bigger, they don't even get paid off of. And I think people are getting tired of that.
Here's Lou Abbott.
10% of the volume, 10 to 15% of the volume on the weaker, on the smaller of the two legs. You don't get paid at all on the larger of the two legs.
Now, here are some inconvenient truths that these guys honestly maybe didn't understand about binary plans or just forgot to mention. First of all, you absolutely get paid on both legs in a binary. All of them, always. Here's what I mean. Let's say it pays 10% of the weak leg. The weak leg has $1,000 in volume. The strong leg has $1,500 in volume. Yes, the weak leg is the gauge that determines how much volume that 10% is based on, but it's actually removed from both sides. So when you get paid 10% of that $1,000 and it's removed from the strong side as well. So the next week you have zero in the left and 500 in the right. So you actually got paid 5% of $2,000 of volume, not 10% of 1,000 and zero of the other 1,000. $2,000 just got removed. You just got a $100 commission on it. That's 5% of $2,000. They're exploiting the way that people describe binary plans as a percentage of the weak leg. I gotta believe they know that volume is removed from both sides, since it's explained in virtually every single compensation plan brochure about binary plans that have ever existed. Not only that, but binary plans as most other plans, always have fast start bonuses. Most of them now have break-even bonuses. They have leadership pools. They have rank advancement bonuses. And virtually all of them, I can think of only one exception, have matching bonuses, all of which pay on the strong leg. For example, back when I was in Longevity Network from about 95 to 2003 total, I was full-time with them for a little under 10 years, there was a point, I think in month 23, is when my check hit five digits monthly. And I remember at about that point, I'm a statistics nut, so I was breaking down my check in all kinds of different ways and my genealogy and so forth. And I found out that in most weeks, about 60 to 65% of my income was being derived from the strong leg, primarily from matching bonuses. Matching bonuses pay a percentage of all of the binary commissions that are earned off those people you sponsored, and most of them pay down several generations, those that they sponsored and those that they sponsored. So, for example, what we used to say in longevity was, yeah, this really resolves this whole lopsided leg issue, because that's probably one of the biggest knocks on binaries. Well, you can have a weak leg and a strong leg. You only get paid on the weak leg. I'll tell you a quick little anecdote. I know I'm going to go way over an hour on this one, but I think you'll appreciate this. Back in, if it was September of 95, we made the change in October, September of 1995, the longevity owners brought a bunch of leadership into Henderson, Nevada, and there was 55 of us around this big table. And one of the things that was kind of the consensus was, we need a new plan. We had a generationally paying unilevel that looked on paper exactly like a breakaway. And we had to keep explaining to people why it wasn't a breakaway. Even back in the mid-90s, there was this aversion towards breakaway plans already, which is unfortunate, but there was. So we said, we need a new plan. So I and one other person was called into the home office. And someday, if anybody ever comes to Vegas, we have lunch or something, I'll take you down to the end of Sunset Boulevard into this little business bar. If we can look through the window, I can show the exact spot where the binary match was invented. Okay, it should be historical MLM landmark. That was when Jim Song, the owner of the company, it was his idea. Jim Song from Longevity Network, he invented the binary match. He said, okay, we have a pro and con columns up on the whiteboard of all the different types of plans. The con column on the binary, this is the straight binary now, it was pretty filled up. One of the issues was, well, lopsided legs. What if you enrolled the number one commission earner in the company? But that's all. You'd have one giant leg and one little leg, and you wouldn't get paid anything. Then Jim came up with the idea, what about a matching bonus? 100% match of all the people you sponsored. Back then it was 100% just the people you sponsored. Didn't pay them more than one generation. So that way, if you sponsored the number one commission earner in the company, you would probably be the number one matching bonus earner in the company from a one-legged binary, entirely from the strong leg. We all love the idea. They went with it. It's become one of the most copied concepts in MLM history, adding a matching bonus to a binary, although it's been done in many different ways now. That's what the matching bonus does. It, besides incentivizing, sponsoring, and supporting and working with those people that you sponsor, it also compensates for lopsided legs. That big leg probably became a big leg because someone you sponsored made it that way. Now you can match their commissions. And people always come back and go, well, then, what if your sponsor only has one completely imbalanced leg because they signed up a superstar? Or what if that person signed up a superstar? In other words, you've got this one big giant leg, but it's a whole bunch of people straight down in a line. I guess like a power leg, but no one ever built the other leg, all the way down. And my acerbic sort of sarcastic response, which I'm prone to give, is if that should ever happen, train your cat to sing the national anthem and take her around to all the different baseball stadiums, charge $20,000 per gig, and you can get rich that way instead, because the odds of either of those events occurring are about the same. So again, back to real life now. That's what the matching bonus compensates for. Now, you, those people in your strong leg, you, some of them you sponsored. I mean, I tell you right now, I've got a maxed out leg in a company because I'm the sponsor of one of the top distributors who sponsored three of the other top distributors. So I get matching bonuses. That's a pretty good thing. And even though my organization's actually very lopsided. Most of the income, based on how the binary is designed, can come from the strong leg, because they've fixed them now. They've made adjustments. They found a way to compensate for that, the matching bonus being the primary way to do it. It's funny how they conveniently forget all of these different ways you can earn off the strong leg in a binary when they talk about how unfair it is because you only get paid on the weak leg. First of all, you just don't only get paid on the weak leg. It's just simply not true. Zango actually says on their corporate website, I'm quoting, being required to build both legs, getting paid on the smaller leg, and having a cap on your earnings is not very fair, end quote. Well, first of all, in a unilevel, you essentially have the same problem because almost all of them will tell you when you accumulate your group volume qualification to achieve your different ranks, no more than 50 or 60 or 70% or whatever it might be in the plan can come from any one leg. They always forget that part of their own plan. So you can have lopsided legs in a unilevel too, where you can't count any more after a certain point in the strong leg if it gets too strong. So let's say in a unilevel, you enroll the number one commission earner in the company. She completely blows out that leg and you got $1 million leg and you've got nine other little legs. In almost every unilevel plan out there, you would only be able to count a fraction of that $1 million leg towards your commissions because you wouldn't have the sufficient number of frontline leaders, directors, whatever they would call it in that plan, to qualify for all of that depth. And you'd only be able to count maybe 40 or 50 or 60% of that big leg towards your overall group volume qualification. So unilevels kind of do the same thing to an extent. And again, you're not required to build both legs, as I just explained all the reasons why, you know, you can have lopsided organizations and have most of your volume in one leg and still make a good check in a binary. You don't just get paid on the smaller leg, like they just said. And, yeah, they put a cap on your earnings per position, but then there's no cap on the number of positions you can earn. So there really is no ceiling. And by the way, all of these people, they all say that to some extent you have to balance your legs. You have to have a one-third, two-thirds balance or a 50-50 balance, things like that. These are actually examples some of them have given. Lou Abbott's the one that actually says it most succinctly, so I'll just kind of pick on him for a minute here. By the way, of all of the, I should probably mention, of all these different people that I'm kind of picking on here, Lou's the only one I know personally, and I kind of consider him a friend in the business. I like Lou. He's a good guy. But anyway, can't play favorites, so here's what Lou has to say about this balance requirement.
The idea of matching bonuses. What are the cons of binary compensation plans? Well, you've got to balance the legs. Company can't pay infinite depth on both legs. It just won't work. Company will go out of business. So they limit it in various ways. So you have to balance your legs. For example, there's the one-third, two-third balances, the 50-50 balances. I think more often than not nowadays in comp plans, you're just seeing they pay 10% of the volume, 10 to 15% of the volume on the weaker, on the smaller.
First of all, there are a variety of different ways that binary plans calculate the balance that they pay you on. As Lou said, some do one-third, two-thirds. By the way, I've never seen a plan ever require 50-50, actually require it before you get paid. There might be one out there somewhere. I've never even seen that. But the one-third, two-thirds, I agree with him. I don't like those either. When I design compensation plans, I always tell my clients, every single aspect of that compensation plan should have an answer to this question. What behavior does this incentivize? So requiring that at least one-third of your volume be in one leg and two-thirds in the other, what does that incentivize? Nothing. That is actually a mechanism to create breakage. I got to agree with him on that. There's really no other purpose for it, which is why I don't like those types of binary plans. But I also agree with Lou in that most of them today don't do that. They pay, as he just said, the flat percentage of the weak leg. There is no balance requirement. Balancing maybe to optimize that particular bonus in the plan, the commission, but there's no requirement. In fact, most companies today are even eliminating the minimums in the weak leg that you have to get to. So it's whatever the volume is in the weak leg, you get 10% of it to the penny. So there is no balance requirement in most plans today. Zango specifically says, quote, binary plans pay on unlimited levels, but limit the amount of volume you can be paid on, which limits earnings. Let me say that again. Binary plans pay on unlimited levels, but limit the amount of volume you can be paid on, which limits earnings. I also agree with Lou, he is absolutely right, in that no company can pay on volume infinitely. Even Zango, not a single unilevel out there can pay on volume infinitely. They all limit it in some way. For any company to say binaries limit the amount of volume you can be paid on, which limits earnings, and that's a criticism, when their own plan clearly limits the amount of volume you can be paid on, okay, they all have to block the amount of volume that they pay on in some way. Unilevels do it by only paying down a certain number of levels or generations. Binaries do it by only paying on a certain amount of sales volume. For example, USANA only pays on the first $5,000 of volume in the lesser leg per week. Now let's assume a little imbalance here, just to be fair, make it more real world, and say there's 8,000 in the strong leg. So that's $13,000 of volume per week times 4 1/3 weeks, right? Not an even number of weeks in a month, and you have $78,000 in monthly volume. Now, assuming distributors in a unilevel plan are averaging $107 per month in personal volume, and based on the last survey that I did of all publicly traded companies and private ones that reveal it, tangible consumable product companies, the average distributor does $107. By the way, I've already started work on updating that, and it looks like that number is about to take a jump up. But for right now, it's $107. Okay. It would take about 729 active distributors to achieve the $78,000 in volume. Now, assuming reps recruit an average of about 2.6 people, that is the industry average, my survey says about 2.3. We're all wrong, actually, because it's skewed. Well, it's technically accurate, that's the average, but a whole bunch of people recruit no one, and a few people recruit a lot, it averages 2.6. But let's go with that number. It would take about 14 or 15 levels to get to 729 reps in a unilevel. If a unilevel plan paid down 8 or 9 levels, as most do, with generational bonuses and compression, they're probably reaching down to about an average of, that's right, 14 or 15 levels. In other words, if you didn't follow that, bottom line is, unilevel plans also, quote, limit the amount of volume you could be paid on, end quote, and at about the same point as a binary, they just do it in a different way. Nobody can pay on sales volume infinitely in depth. No company can do that. Now, although I said no plan can pay on volume infinitely in depth, that doesn't mean that we as individual distributors can't earn on sales volume infinitely in depth. Here's what I mean. Let's say you're in a binary, and I enroll you, and I put you in my strong leg, and I put you in a leg that already has $10,000 of volume in it, and let's say that's the flush point. Okay, that's the maximum amount of volume they're going to pay you on per week. Okay, $10,000, just as an example. Right? I put you in that leg, it's already got $10,000 of volume in it every week. So whatever volume you and your organization creates, it's going to get flushed. I'm not going to be able to count it towards my binary commission. And I put you 500 levels deep in my downline. Okay? You build a downline and earn $1,000 a week in commissions. As your sponsor, I earn, let's say, a 20% matching bonus. I'm going to earn $200 off of you, and that $200 came entirely and specifically from sales volume over 500 levels deep in my downline that was flushed from the binary commission calculation in my strong leg. That's where that $200 came from. Now, the company doesn't pay a piece of that volume to everybody in between. To the company, they just go, well, the sponsor gets $200 of this. Company doesn't care if it looks up one level or 1,000 levels to find the sponsor. It's still $200 to the company. But we as individual distributors can earn on sales volume infinitely in depth because of this matching bonus. Now people might say, well, yeah, but they have matching bonuses in unilevel plans. I've even seen them in matrix plans now. Right. But would you ever sponsor someone who you earn that matching bonus on and put them 500 levels deep in a unilevel? No, never. In fact, again, it's financially to your detriment to put them even on your second or third level. Because potentially, again, that's one or two levels of their organization you've just lost from your commission calculation. If a plan paid down 7 or 8 levels, you certainly wouldn't put them 10 or 20 levels deep. So it's not an apples-to-apples analogy. This doesn't apply to a unilevel. You cannot, in any realistic way, as a distributor, get paid on sales volume infinitely in depth. You absolutely can. In a binary. Now, this next binary criticism doesn't really fit anything in John Gossage's 13 reasons binaries are not, you know, why they do not work in MLM, but does kind of dovetail off the concept of unilevels paying on unlimited depth. Here's what Blake Mallon over at Visalis had to say about offering the same leverage as a binary creates with spillover in a power leg, but in a unilevel plan.
You know, bottom line is we have a lot of components where you get the leverage that's been inherent in some of the more modern binary plans out there without the binary curse. So, you know, there's no such thing as the inside of an inside leg. You don't have someone, you know, politicking for some power leg to be stuck underneath them. It is, you know, fair. And bottom line is there's no income cap. There's no minimum. There's no maximum. You got infinite width, infinite depth, and you get paid off what's in your organization.
No politicking for a power leg. Now, I know Blake's obviously a very busy guy. I mean, Visalis is rocking right now. They're growing like crazy. And according to this way this YouTube video is presented, that where I got these audios quotes from, you know, he was caught off guard when the person came into his office to ask him these questions. So, I mean, he may have honestly forgot about their holding tank. You know, that's the one where if you enroll people, you can put them in this holding tank and use them as leverage. For people that you sponsor in the future, you can say, look, I've got these 10 people in this holding tank. I got to place them, like, I think it's 90 days or something. But if you join me, I'll put them all under you. Kind of like a power leg, isn't it? And, of course, without telling anybody that if you do that in a unilevel, all those people you're putting one below the other are going to eventually, if they build big downlines, probably cost you money because all that volume is not going to be out of your pay range because we pay a limited amount of depth. By the way, I'd love to know how any unilevel, including Visalis's, I'm not just picking on them, pays on quote-unquote infinite depth. He did just say that. But anyway, no, they can't. Lou Abbott is right. They can't do that. Now, you may notice in this section right here that the tone of my voice has changed a little bit because actually I finished recording the podcast and I've done editing it, but I felt that it wasn't just quite long enough. So it needs a little bit more of me talking. So I decided I would go back to this section and elaborate a little bit on this holding tank concept. But there's a point about this that I do want to make that I think deserves to kind of be revisited. In this holding tank, where someone who you enroll can be held, I believe, again, it's either 60 or 90 days, they are treated as if they're on your first level, as I understand it, until you actually place them during that time. So you can enroll other people in the meantime, as I explained, and say, hey, look, I just signed up Sally Superstar, and she's had million-dollar businesses and three other companies, and she's going to rock it, and blah, 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 isn't this great? You know what? If you come on in, when I actually place Sally, I'll make sure she's in your downline. So you can use her as leverage to bring people in. That's the main purpose of this holding tank concept. But this is actually what I call an illusionary benefit based on the illusion you're the only one that gets the benefit. There's a lot of aspects of comp plans where we look at it from the standpoint of what it gets us, but we never stop to think what happens if everybody else gets to do this too. So consider this scenario. You sign me up on your first level. Okay? I have just now signed up Sally Superstar, and you're delighted. Because she's on your second level at this point until I place her, because she's in my holding tank now. So they do pay on her volume and her group in the meantime. But for the next, let's call it 60 days, I'm going to be bringing other people in and putting them between me and Sally and moving her more and more levels deep. But that first pay period, you look and you see her on your second level, you see the group she's starting to form, and your check goes up $500, and you're really excited. But then, as I continue to bring people in and move her further and further down, let's say by the end of that 60 days, I've convinced 50 people to come in because they're going to get Sally Superstar in their downline. So by the time this is over and I have to place her, take her out of my holding tank and actually position her someplace, she's 50 levels deep. And there's 49 other people between me and her. And you look at your downline and your payout, and all of a sudden, Sally Superstar is gone. She was on your second level, and now she's way down there on your 52nd level. You'd probably be a little upset by that, wouldn't you? Because your entire downline now is going to be pretty much out of your pay range. So that's the effect of building in depth in a unilevel. And of course, I, as this new distributor that didn't really know any better, is going to go, wait a minute, now she's building this huge group, and it's all out of my pay range. I should have kept her up on my first level. Consider the exact same scenario in a binary. Okay, you sign me up. I sign up Sally Superstar, put her in my holding tank. I have 60 days now to place her in my downline. I start bringing in other people, using her as leverage, moving her further and further down. But in this case, not only do I hope you never find out about it, and if you do, I don't have to await that call from you saying, please don't put her any deeper. Now I'm going to call you up and give you the good news, and you're going to help me. push her further down, because now you as my sponsor are also going to be able to use her as leverage. And by the way, I'm not saying I necessarily agree with this type of strategy. I'm just giving you a hypothetical example that now you're going to start calling all of your prospects and saying, hey, come on in. I got a guy. This guy, Len, just signed up Sally Superstar. She's in his holding tank. I can put you under Len, and then Sally's can go under you. You will help me bring more people in, and together you and I can maybe put her 500 levels deep, and you don't care. Not only do you not care, you're excited. You're ecstatic by this, because it makes no difference to your income if she's on your first level, second level, or 500th level. In a binary, it's just the total volume in the leg. But my person I just put in my holding tank and eventually placed helped you bring in all those people in between, and she just helped all those people you just sponsored earn more commissions, thus increasing your matching bonus off of all of those people. And there's no detrimental effect to anyone's income, even if we put her 5,000 levels deep. So this holding tank concept in a binary absolutely creates an environment prone to politicking, possibly even more so than in a binary. I mean, imagine this. How likely do you think it is that people now are going to go upline shopping? Okay. I mean, if they went to you and say, hey, how many people you got in your holding tank? How many people can you give me? 10 people and $1,000 of volume. Well, Joe over here has 20 people in his holding tank and about 2,500 in volume. That's what I'm going to get for that one. I wonder if there's somebody else in Visalis or whatever company might have this holding tank concept that might even have a bigger holding tank and can give me even more people. How is this holding tank concept in Unilevel not vulnerable to that type of situation? Again, in a Unilevel plan, this holding tank concept, it's very ill-suited for a width-oriented plan like this. It works perfectly in a binary. Oh, and by the way, there is one other point I forgot to make when I originally recorded this. There is one other company besides Visalis that has added this holding tank concept to their Unilevel compensation plan. That would be Nerium, Jeff Olson's company, the guy who just ranted about the ills of power legs and how only top leaders and experienced leaders demand to be put in them. I wonder if those same leaders now are going to be demanding to be put above a lot of people being held in a holding tank. So there's a saying that I've always said for many, many years. I said depth creates partners. Width creates competitors. If you sponsor your friends, your family, coworkers, things like that, wouldn't it be better to put them one below the other so at least some of them are working with each other as partners than to put your mother and your brother and your best friend and your girlfriend or whoever, boyfriend, whoever, straight across your front line so they're all competitors to each other? Or to be philanthropic, essentially, and put them one below the other and give up that potential income just to help them work together? And wouldn't it be better to do that and have it not cost you anything? Yeah, well, in a binary, it doesn't cost you anything. I've done a survey on my MarketWave website, marketwaveinc.com. You can go there. You can take the survey. You get the results of the survey for free just by taking the survey. It's over 7,700 responses now for almost 20 years. It goes back. It'll say 520-something now because I keep it fresh and keep renewing it over and over. But there's a question on there. It's always been there. Would you prefer to build in depth or width? By almost 4-1, 76% to 20%, the other 4% said they didn't understand the question. You out there, people in this business, prefer to build in depth as opposed to width. I think currently it's 75-21 in this last one I did. So overwhelming number would prefer to build in depth than width, and for good reason. Wouldn't it be great if you could build in depth and have it not cost you anything potentially to do that? But anyway, yeah, so in a Unilevel where you have this holding tank, where you're using people you've enrolled previously as leverage to get future people in, that's basically the same thing as a power leg, and I can bet you there's going to be some politicking. In fact, there's going to be sponsor shopping, as I'm sure there already is. People are going to say, how many people you have in your holding tank? Well, I got 10 with about $1,000 in orders. Well, this guy over here has 15 and about 2,000 in orders. So, I'm going to go with him. He can put more people on my downline. That's what happens in that situation, right? Now, again, it's not really that common in a binary, but it's kind of ironic that That's what a unilevel company is doing that's criticizing binaries for doing that. Number six, because of, again, I'm quoting John Gossage here, because of lopsided income structures, binaries are associated to quote-unquote get-rich-quick schemes. Now, one of the things that I really hate is when I'm arguing with someone or debating someone, and they pretend that they don't understand my point, so they don't have to respond to it. A lot of these anonymous kind of internet trolls, they call them, that you get in debates with, they love to do this. They'll just pretend they don't understand your point if they can't respond to it. It drives me nuts. And I don't want to be accused of doing that too, but I don't have a clue what he's talking about here. Because of lopsided income structures, binaries are associated to get-rich-quick schemes. I've read that sentence over and over and over, and I just don't understand what he means. All types of plans can be associated to get-rich-quick schemes, obviously. Binaries were invented in 1989, and I'm pretty sure there were get-rich-quick schemes before then. So, again, I'm just going to pass that one up because I don't know how to answer it, don't know what it means. Number seven, binaries have been historically used by companies that have sold overpriced services, example, phone cards, thus in reality being disguised money chains, end quote. Yes, that's true. About 15 years before he wrote his article. Okay, this comment was completely outdated by a decade and a half back in 2009. Okay, when was the last time you saw anyone selling a prepaid phone card, let alone an overpriced one from an MLM company? Let me get this straight. Only MLM companies with binary plans have overpriced products in network marketing? I might want to introduce John to another guy who doesn't like binaries, whose company sells four boxes of cookies for $125. Yeah, that plan's a unilevel, by the way. But anyway, I digress. Number eight, real growth is based on Pareto's law, the 80-20 rule. It holds that only 20% of the people will do the work, end quote. Okay, well, actually, it's called Pareto's principle, which holds that 80% of the effects come from 20% of the causes. And in MLM, it's actually more like a 90-10 rule. About 90% of your downline sales and recruiting will come from about 10% of your downline distributors. But that, I admittedly picked a nit there. But let's go on. John also goes on to say, quote, binaries claim to be able to get around this, end quote. They do, actually, and they can. Think about this. Think about this 80-20 rule, okay? You have a unilevel. You got 10 people on your first level. Two of those legs are producing 80% of your volume. So let's say those two legs each have $4,000 in volume. Now, again, in most unilevels, you wouldn't have enough people frontline with a high enough rank to earn you a high enough rank to access most of the volume in those larger legs because you're lopsided. Interesting how that term applies now to a unilevel. Your total group volume probably won't count most of it because no more than 50, 60% of your volume can't come from any one leg. But again, that's, according to the 80-20 rule, kind of how it would shape out. Of 10 people, two of them are going to produce most of your volume. Now imagine this was a binary, where you take all 10 of those legs and compress them into two legs, with each of those two really strong distributors in each leg. You would make significantly more income in that scenario. And people, well then, how do you know they're going to be in opposite legs? What if the two strong players end up in one leg? Okay, so put them in both one leg, put the other eight, combine them into the small leg, and you would still make enough in the small leg to qualify for the matching bonuses on those two people in your strong leg, and still make a big check. So any way you look at it, combining these legs up into two greatly reduces the chance for this 80-20 rule to negatively affect your income. It doesn't completely resolve it, of course, but goes a lot further than a unilevel or a breakaway or any other width-oriented plan to overcoming it. Actually, I've never really seen anybody make the case that it overcomes this. I can see John Gossage making a case that that's the case we make and it's not true. But if we were to make it, it actually would be true. Now, here's the funny part. John goes on in the same section to actually recite a little dialogue between two people. And this is how he plays it out. Because he goes on to say, that is why participants in binaries can be heard saying, remember, this is coming off his 80-20 rule statement. No idea how this applies to it, but just bear with me. Quote, I almost made $32,739 last month. The other guy says, well, and how much did you wind up making? Oh, well, I really made only $287. But wait until I balance next month. And then John goes on to say, no chance really against an automated system building down one leg. So somehow he's reverted back to the automated system thing again. I don't know where that rose its head here out of nowhere. But the point is that this whole scenario is completely nonsensical on multiple levels, slight pun intended. Binaries don't pay monthly. Okay, they usually pay weekly. Unilevels tend to pay monthly. They pay weekly, and there's not an even number of weeks in a month, so you have a four-week rolling cycle. That's what you qualify for. And imagine someone that has that almost made $32,739. And he says last month here, but again, he doesn't even understand that they don't pay monthly, they pay weekly, which virtually 100% of binary plans do. But anyway, let's assume he means weekly. If they pay 10% of the week leg, as most do, that would mean you have $327,390 in that leg. But you only got paid $287, which means you would have only had $2,870 in that leg. What's a scenario where you had $2,870 but almost made $32,739? You had a little under $3,000 in the leg, but almost had $330,000. Again, it just makes no sense, no logical sense. The only thing I can think of that maybe John was trying to refer to here was what Blake Mallon addressed here. Listen to this.
So you're going to get paid on what you do. So you don't have to worry about lesser leg, balance this, leg switches. You get paid on what's in your organization. It's stable. You don't have to worry about going from one income and then all of a sudden something happens and it gets cut. So very, very stable back end. We have dollar for...
Now, in a binary plan, the total monthly checks, you know, the four-week total, it rises and falls at pretty much the same rate as any other kind of plan. So the only thing I can think of here that Blake and John are referring to is the inconsistency between checks each week of the four-week cycle. Because understand, every week that you're paid on, you essentially have a completely different binary tree. A completely different group of people in your downline have auto ships that fire off each of those 4 weeks. A different group of customers order products in each of those 4 weeks. So that's why I told people don't over-strategize the whole weak leg, strong leg thing, because in week one, your left leg could be your strong leg, and week two, your right leg could be your strong leg. It's a completely different group. Back in the longevity days, I had what I called a weak week, a W-E-A-K-W-E-E-K. Okay, I had 3 weeks where it was a very large check, and I had the fourth week where it was about a third of the other 3 weeks. Well, when I went from week three to week four, you know, and the check went from whatever, 3,000 to 1,000, I didn't go where two-thirds of my organization go. I just realized, well, no, this is week four. I made $1,000 in week four. The previous week four of that four-week cycle, and maybe I made 900. So actually, it went up $100, you know, comparing week four to the previous week four. So think about this. If you were in a binary, and in week one you made $3,000, in week two, you made $10,000. Then it dropped to $1,000 in week three, and then rose back up to $6,000 in week four. That's pretty inconsistent, right? That totals $20,000. So if you made $20,000 that way, or $20,000 all at once at the end of the month, because the unilevel pays you monthly, do you really care? You know, how much the check went up and down each of those 4 weeks? Personally, I'd kind of like to have it broken up into 4 weeks, no matter how much it goes up and down, then all at once at the end of the month. In fact, studies have shown that we've done, and my company I was with previously did, distributors absolutely appreciate getting paid weekly more than they do monthly. It's much more inspiring and motivating. They get a return for their effort quicker. But again, even if that's what they mean, I don't get how it's a criticism of binaries. So once again, I'm sorry I can't really respond to the criticism here because I don't understand what it means. Number nine, quote, binaries are usually built on hype, with huge cash giveaways in order to lure people based on the greed factor. The product becomes an excuse. They often create copycat products of already existing and legitimate products. The negative side of this is that they also taint legitimate businesses, end quote. That's according to John Gotsich. Seriously, binaries are the only plans built on hype. I think pretty much any kind of plan can be built on hype. Huge cash giveaways? I'm guessing he's referring to deals and signing bonuses here, but two of the most prominent practitioners of this deal-making tactic are companies using unilevel plans right now. And again, can be applied to any type of company, has no bearing whatsoever on the type of plan they use, to lure people in based on the greed factor. So those wanting to make large incomes in unilevels, breakaways, and matrix plans are fine. But if the plan is a binary, now you're greedy. And only companies using a binary plan create copycat products. Trying to correlate the type of comp plan a company uses and their penchant for copying other companies' products, it's a complete non sequitur. I mean, it's almost just kind of silly. There are companies out there that are knocking off products like crazy. I mean, look at all of the juice companies. A unilevel company came out with a juice, and another unilevel company came out with another juice. And then another unilevel company came out with that juice, and they were binary. Then another company came out with a really hot juice, and they were a unilevel. Another one came out with another juice, and the next one was a unilevel. Four of the first five major juice companies that knocked off somebody else's exotic functional beverage were unilevels. I'm not saying that's wrong, or I'm not knocking unilevels. I'm just saying this is completely irrelevant to the category of comp plan. The entire argument is just, like I said, it's silly. It's nonsensical. What Zango says specifically on this issue is, I'm quoting, "In binary plans, medium-sized distributors can benefit, but the binary can hurt large distributor leaders. Small distributors become sacrificial lambs to generate volume." So apparently it only works for medium-sized distributors. They benefit, according to Zango. It hurts the larger leaders. Well, that's interesting because another guy who's made a very public, in this case almost kind of vicious public case against binaries, is John Council. And who's otherwise, he's a very experienced, reputable, and very astute guy. In fact, I've spoken to John a few years ago. He's like a good guy, but he kind of blew it on this one. He claims that binaries only benefit the greedy heavy hitters at the top. So maybe Mr. Council and Zango should get together and kind of compare notes, because the binary bashers seem to be stepping all over each other's arguments out there. John Council also appended to his very negative case against binaries John Gossage's 13 reasons why binaries are bad to his article, and refers to John Gossage's article as an excellent article. Come on, John. Seriously? Anyway, again, I've done a survey of 7,700 people. I've mentioned that. Another question on that survey, I mentioned that 7,700 because that means it's really good data. It's a lot of people. I asked this question: would you prefer the plan to be front, middle, or back weighted? Okay, the majority say middle weighted. About a third of them say I don't understand the question. Of those who understand the question, most of them say they want it to be middle weighted, which is interesting because, and I'm going to do a whole show about weighting at some point in the future. I don't want to do this now, but the vast majority of people out there are looking for a middle weighted plan. They're looking for a plan that makes them enough to quit their job and do this for a living. Not a few hundred dollars and not $1 million. They want $10,000 or whatever it takes for them to quit their job and do this for a living. That's their primary income goal. 86% of you actually said that, which means the vast majority of you are looking for a middle weighted plan, although the majority of distributors don't know that's what they're looking for. Most of the plans out there, wherever you're at one place, you got to take it away from someplace else. So they shove it up front with the break-even bonuses and the fast starts and stuff to get you into profit as quickly as possible. They shove it onto the back to have a bunch of rich people they can show off on their webinars and at their conventions. Guess where it comes from? The middle. So when most people are looking for a weighting that looks more like a diamond-shaped with the widest point in the middle, most comp plans are weighted exactly the opposite. They're hourglass weighted, and they're pinched in the middle. So the fact that binaries, according to Zango, only, you know, benefit the medium-sized distributor and hurt the little guy and the one trying to make a whole bunch of money would mean that it is exactly what the vast majority of distributors are looking for. Unfortunately for me, it's not really true. Any type of plan can be front, middle, or back weighted depending on the rules you apply to the plan. You can make a breakaway plan, which tend to be back-weighted, front-weighted, if you apply the right rules to it. Okay, you can make a unilevel front or back-weighted or middle-weighted or whatever, same with a binary. Any plan can be front, middle, or back-weighted. So, like I said, it'd be great if what Zango said was true, because that'd be a great argument for binaries, but it's really not. Number 11, John Gossage again. Binaries lead you to purchase multiple business centers. in order to maximize your earnings potential. Okay, even in mid-2009, when John wrote this, what he described had been almost non-existent for over a decade. USANA and Market America, I think, were the last two to ever have like three positions, what they called a tri-pack, one position and the two below it. And I think in USANA, to activate these three business centers cost you, it was based on points, you know, BV and CV, but it actually cost about $500 in product. Most Unilevels, with their single position, have enrollment packages as large or larger. So it still costs you about as much to join. But again, the large majority of binary plans today, the vast majority of them, only have a single position, just like a Unilevel. One position with two legs. That's what you build. Okay? That's Mona V, that's Zri, that's Agile, that's Isagenix, that's all of these types of companies. Okay? Everyone's building just one position with two legs. So, like most of the points in this article, it's just a straw man's argument. It doesn't really apply to any current conventional binary plans today. Quote, what this really does is prompt front-loading products, end quote. Okay, again, whether a plan offers three centers or one, the upfront product package can still be a front-load. Makes no difference how many positions you're offering. If someone has only one position and offers you a $1,000 package that you would only buy just to get a higher rank in the plan, that could be an illegal front-load. You have three centers, and it only costs you $100 for each one, $300 in product, and you're buying those products because you actually want it, that wouldn't be a front load, which is interesting because Mr. Gossage then goes on to say, quote, both state AGs as well as the federal regulators, FTC, are concerned that this is a borderline and often outright infringement on anti-pyramid laws. Wrong. Again, he's referring to this issue of having three positions that you can activate in a binary, and he is completely wrong. Back in the early to mid-1990s, there were a lot of companies that offered seven centers, one, two, and four, or even more, like Destiny Telecom, SkyBiz, Juwe. They all got hit for that. No challenge to a three-center plan, to my knowledge, has ever taken place. Understand, USANA offers three positions that you can activate. The SEC, the Security and Exchange Commission, investigated USANA as part of that whole Barry Minkow thing back in 2008 for 10 months. They went on site. Okay, this was a thorough investigation. People, oh, well, they looked at Bernie Madoff and they didn't get his Ponzi. No, when they looked at Bernie Madoff, they looked for accounting irregularities. They were not in there looking for a Ponzi scheme. I know it's hard to get in to explain, and I can't get into this now, but when you have a warrant to look for something, you can only look for that thing. I actually was on jury duty one time for a case where people went into a house looking for firearms, illegal firearms, and they found illegal drugs. Well, they didn't have a warrant for illegal drugs, so it was inadmissible. They're trying to try the guy for his drugs because they didn't find any firearms. So again, in the USANA case, they went in there specifically looking for evidence of a Ponzi or pyramid scheme and found absolutely nothing. Nothing. Closed it, done, goodbye, we're gone. They did absolutely nothing. So there's never been a challenge to three positions in a binary. It's just not true. And not only that, again, like I said, the vast majority of them don't even offer that anymore today. Number 12. Binaries redefine who they consider as distributors, often disregarding more than 90% of their distributor base simply according to their own invented criteria to make it more difficult to be considered a distributor, such as minimum volume, period of activity, having already sponsored someone, or, and I'm not quoting here, but listen to this one carefully, even already having received a commission check. Thus allowing binaries to misrepresent average earnings, thus skewing results by more than 90%, end quote. Now, what he's talking about here is the annual commission distribution data that some MLM companies publish, the more open ones, the more transparent ones, and how most binary companies who exhibit their commission data cite the average earnings of all, quote-unquote, active distributors, but define active as only those who've ordered or sold something in the past 2 or 3 months. Okay. Now, this, once again, has nothing whatsoever to do with the type of plan the company uses. Any kind of plan can be used within a company who manipulates its commission data. And I'm also not sure I even have a problem with that. I mean, think about this. If you were to determine the average earnings of all active reps, why would you want to count those who are not active? This is kind of like, doing a clinical trial for a pain medication, and you hand 100 subjects this pain medication for, let's say, migraine headaches, and 90% of them don't even consume the product. They just look at it, they smell it, they roll it around in their fingers, maybe they lick it a little bit, then they just throw it away. Now, of the other 10%, by the way, probably half of them would take it, but didn't take it as directed. Maybe 5 of them actually took it as directed. Results come back and says that only 8% of these people that received this pain medication reported any benefit to their migraine headaches. Wow. 8%. Sounds like that product didn't work. Well, unless you not count the 90% of them that didn't even take the product. Okay? In fact, if we count the 5 people that took it as directed, it was 100%. Okay? 3 of the other 5 who didn't take it as directed still had benefit. Or a better analogy might be, we're going to do a survey of gyms to find out how effective gym memberships are in getting people's weight down and getting them into better shape. Would you count every single person that signed up for a gym membership and then never stepped foot in the gym again? Would you count the ones that went in once, ran on the treadmill for 10 minutes, and said, phew, well, okay, I worked out and left? Okay, I wouldn't count them in that survey, how effective gym memberships are. I'd only count the people that actually used the gym. So, again, I don't have a problem with companies not counting inactive people. But I do get what John is going for here. How you define active, you can go a little overboard on this. Okay, you can manipulate this. For example, as John criticizes, there are companies out there that say, well, you're not active unless you got a commission check. Okay, in other words, you could have bought product this month and you're still not active because you didn't get a commission check. That would be a little egregious, I would think. That's really trying to manipulate your data, I would feel, in my opinion. Apparently, John agrees. Here's what's most ironic about John Gossage's 12th reason why binary plans do not work for MLM. The company that he promotes that uses a unilevel plan also publishes an annual commission data chart and defines active as those who got a check that month. They are actually the most guilty of the very type of data manipulation that he's criticizing. Number 13, finally, thorough analysis of most binaries show that only a handful make a considerable income, while between 98% to upwards of 99% of distributors do not even make in commissions on what they pay in on a monthly basis. Now, let's think about this. According to John Gossage, most binary plans not only don't pay enough for 98 to 99% of their reps to even cover their monthly minimum product purchase, but only a handful even make a few thousand dollars a month, what he would call considerable income. In other words, hardly anyone in a binary plan is really making anything significant, according to John Gossage. I wonder then, where did the $1.7 billion go that Manatech has paid their reps since 1994? Or the $1.9 billion that USANA has paid over that same period of time? We know that MonaV has done over $2.5 billion in sales over 7 years. So where did the over $1 billion of commissions that they've paid go to? If all of these binary companies are doing tens or hundreds of millions of dollars in annual sales, and they're all paying out 40 to 50% of that, where is it going, John? According to your own company, Zengo, it's mostly going to those who are in the middle of the plan. That's a lot of people. Now, I know exactly how binary plans pay because, again, I was the top earner for one for about 8 years. Okay, the one that invented the binary match, by the way. I know exactly who it pays to, how it can be weighted, how it's distributed, and I know that when the same 50 cents of every dollar goes back out to the field in commission, it doesn't evaporate into thin air. Okay, it goes into a lot of distributors' pockets, just like any other unilevel plan that pays out 45 or 50%. Okay, the type of plan that you have doesn't make that money just suddenly all go away. Now, before I wrap up, there's one other kind of odd claim that actually Zengo makes in their corporate commentary on binaries that didn't really fit with anything Mr. Gossage said. So I just want to cover this one before we finish up here. Again, I'm quoting Zengo now. Many binary companies also use a different pricing technique. They have a wholesale amount that is paid for the product, a PV amount that is used for qualification. and a CV amount of what they actually pay commissions on. Example, $130 wholesale, 100 PV for qualification, 80 CV for commission payout. If they pay out 50%, it is on the CV, so only $40 is paid to distributors and $90 is kept by the company, not a 50% payout. End quote. First of all, CV refers to commissionable volume. Some people call it BV, bonus volume. It's the point value that's assigned to the product. It's usually a little less than wholesale. Having an 80 CV on $130 wholesale, which is a 62% ratio, is extremely low and not typical. Okay, so their example is very, very weighted toward the low end. That's not realistic and indicative of how most companies do this. Most BV to wholesale ratios or CV to wholesale generally come in at between 75 to 90%. So again, if it's 62%, that's someone who's grossly manipulating them, which is a small little tiny minority. Okay, and it's also very rare that you see a company with three pricing tiers. Well over 90% of them have wholesale and they have BVs. That's it. Of course, they all have retail, you know, suggested retail price. But again, Zengo says you have a separate one just for qualifying. That's extremely rare. Okay, it's the wholesale price and the BV or the CV, you know, the point value. Okay, and I've seen this three-tiered type of pricing structure maybe a dozen times out of literally over 1,000 companies I've reviewed over the last 21 years. So they're really stretching their argument here. And I've always said, if you've got the goods, why give us BS? Why not make a case based on a realistic, actual, real-world presentation? You know, base your examples on that. Blake Mallon actually kind of rang in on this particular issue as well, too. Here's what he had to say about it.
We have dollar for dollar volume, so you don't have to worry about all this funny math, BV, GKV, BV, and all this stuff out there. You know, a $4.99 system is a $4.99 volume, right? And that $49 balance kit is a $49 in volume. So when you're focused on your commissions, it's very easy to figure out, because you get paid a simple percentage off a simple dollar amount. So dollar for dollar, people like. And
you know, it's interesting how network marketers as a group have this masterful way of saying things that are technically true, but just not always the whole truth. I mean, it is technically true that many binary companies, as Blake says, pay on a CV point system, because many MLM companies pay on a CV point system. I mean, it's kind of like saying many brunettes like chocolate, which would be technically true because many human beings like chocolate. In fact, the majority of Unilevel plans pay on a CV system. You know, although some may call it something different, you know, like BV for bonus volume instead of CV for commissionable volume or whatever. But, I mean, it's really a pretty simple system. I mean, Blake tries so hard to make it sound so cumbersome and complicated, and it's really just another column of numbers. Instead of the wholesale price, you just look at the CV column. If you need 100 CV to qualify in the month, you just look at the numbers in that column instead of the other column. Everything else is completely done by the computer. I mean, it's really not that complicated. And there are actually very legitimate and actually healthy reasons for employing a CV or a BV pricing structure, which is probably explains why at least 80% of the companies today, no matter what kind of comp plan they use, actually employ this type of system. First of all, if you go into foreign markets, it's really convenient to have BVs or CVs that you can change around instead of the wholesale prices, because you have constant fluctuations between the dollar and the yen, or the dollar and rupees or whatever. So instead of constantly having to change your pricing, depending on that fluctuation on the dollar, you just adjust the CVs and you can keep your product price list intact without having to constantly make changes to it. But the biggest value to a BV or CV system, which I'll do a whole other show on this later because it can also be grossly abused by any type of plan, but the legitimate reason for it is that different products have different margins. And the more expensive products to produce, sometimes you want to pay a little less commission on it because then you can keep the price down. Most network marketing companies, if you're going to pay out 45 to 50% in the compensation plan, you need at least a 5-to-1 markup. Most likely a 6-to-1 markup is going to be necessary to afford that kind of payout. In other words, if your product costs $1 to actually manufacture, you're going to have to charge at least $5 and probably closer to $6 or $6.50 wholesale to afford that payout and to make enough profit and margin so forth to run your company. So if you have a shampoo that, say, cost $1 to produce and you're going to sell it for 10, you could probably make it 10 CV because it's a very high margin product. If you have some type of really expensive vitamin, or I saw a company once that had a lotion that had literally little flecks of gold in it, actual gold, you know, if that costs $15 to produce, then you might, instead of marking that up 6 to 1 or whatever, you might want to just charge $50 for it, but only make it 35 CV or something like that. So the more expensive products to produce, you can keep the wholesale price down. And then the trade-off is, yeah, you make a little less commission on those products, but you can move more of those products because the prices are kept in a reasonable range. Now, again, like I said, some companies in any kind of plan have abused this, and we'll talk about that on another day. But again, very legitimate reasons for using BVs and CVs. It's not a bad thing. Now, in summary, actually, I'm going to use John Gotsis' summary. Here's his summary. The success of network marketing has nonetheless been tainted by the behavior of certain clever companies and distributors who sought ever faster success, often at the expense and reputation of network marketing. They came up with a binary compensation plan. End quote. No, they didn't. The binary plan was invented by one person, a guy by the name of David Crow, back in 1989, and he actually used it on a gold and silver program that was eventually found to be a pyramid scheme, again, having nothing to do with the plan, but how he was selling the gold and silver coins. But then a few companies came along in the early 90s, like Market American, USANA, and so forth, and they said, what would happen if we would run some legitimate products through this? And then the rest is history. It's become one of the most popular compensation plans ever. Gotsis goes on to say in his summary here, quote, binary companies are here today, gone tomorrow. The fastest growth companies have been binaries. End quote. So they're here today, gone tomorrow. Just like Market America was here 20 years ago and still isn't gone. USANA was here 18 years ago, still isn't gone. Menatech, 18 years ago. Do I have to do that whole list again? Now, I think you got the idea. And as for them being the fastest growth companies, I'm not really sure how that serves his case against binary plans. Binaries have certainly been among the fastest growth companies over the past decade, and they actually do tend to have faster initial growth than width-based plans. But they certainly are very fast growth companies, and I think that's a good thing. As part of his summary, John gives us an example of a binary company that was here today, gone tomorrow. And I'm going to describe this mysterious example to you because I need your help. Okay, listen to the clues carefully here. In the 90s, a binary company grew from zero to close to $2 billion in 18 months and collapsed to nothing within 2 months, leaving hundreds of thousands throughout the world with dashed hopes and an aftertaste of having been abused and taken advantage of. The founder of the company escaped to an atoll in the Pacific. Now, okay, again, listen to the clues there that John has just given us. Supposedly, there's a company out there that launched in the 90s. It was a binary plan. It grew to $2 billion in 18 months, collapsed to nothing within 2 months. It had hundreds of thousands of distributors, and the founder is now living in an atoll in the Pacific. Who is that company? First of all, understand, he's talking about a company with a binary plan that within 1.5 years grew to be one of the 5 largest MLM companies in history. Not sure how that, again, makes a case against binary plans, but I mean, if this were true, I would think that would be a pretty good case for binary plans. Unfortunately, there's no such company. He can't be talking about SkyBiz, because that opened in 1995, and the FTC shut them down in 2001, and sales were only around $390 million, I think, for their history. He can't be talking about Jewelway, that opened in 91, and the FTC shut them down in 97. So give me your theories. Who do you think could be this company that John Gossage is talking about that in 18 months grew to be one of the largest MLM companies in history and then just disappeared in 2 months? And the owner's living off an atoll in the Pacific. Who the heck is he talking about? Now, again, I really want to wrap this up because now my goal is to keep this under 2 hours. So let me just reiterate that the binary plan isn't perfect. Okay, that's not what I'm trying to say here. You can't create a plan that's all things to all people. Okay, all plans, including the binary, have their pros and cons. Okay, they have their advantages and disadvantages, like I said before. Unilevel plans, if designed properly, can be, obviously, very successful plans. Zango, Visalis, Nerium, Jeff Olson's new company, have had great success with a unilevel plan. All I'm saying is, if you're going to bash a type of plan used by so many of your fellow companies in this space, if you really feel compelled to do that for some reason, then make a legitimate case. Don't manipulate the facts or admit the ones that are inconvenient. Or worse, just manufacture them out of thin air, like the $2 billion company. Base your argument on real-world case studies and of what's most prevalent out there, not cherry-picked examples of the few exceptions that just happen to fit your agenda. Okay, think through your point and make sure it's reasonable and makes sense logically. In the case of these binary criticisms, please understand, most of this isn't a matter of opinion. The majority of the cases made against the binary plan are legally, historically, mathematically, and logically wrong. If you want to see examples of what I'm talking about as far as the right way, I think, to critique a compensation plan, go to the article section of my MarketWave website and check out my critiques of specifically the compressed unilevel plan and my expose of the Aussie 2-Up. Okay, I really believe I've made my case against these types of plans in a very pragmatic, mathematical, historical, fact-based manner. But trying to trash a competitor's plan just because they're a competitor is really the last thing this industry needs. Okay, there's already way too much just gratuitous competition bashing going on at a grassroots level in this business as it is. I mean, without our top leaders and companies all joining the dog pile. Okay, it serves no one for us to tell our prospects that all but our own opportunity is bad. You know, it's a great industry. You really got to get involved with this. But 99% of the companies are bad, or they're inferior, or they're flawed in some way, but it's a really great industry. You got to get involved in it. Okay, that's not working. I'm not saying we shouldn't demand that our leaders and companies be accountable and call out those that are not operating ethically or competently. I mean, I do that. I do that a lot, actually. But I at least try to have a legitimate reason and pick targets worthy of the criticism. There's nothing wrong with us trying to clean up our own industry from within. And if you take like an x-ray of the MLM industry, I mean, it would show a few dark spots. But we have enough mud and crap getting slung at us from the anti-MLM critics outside this industry without us picking it up and slinging it back at each other. So if you don't have any valid criticisms of the binary plan, or any type of plan for that matter, then please don't even try to present them. Okay, the last thing that I want to say before we wrap this up is that I know I promised I was going to do a review of Zeke. That is still coming up, Zeke Rewards. I know some of you are getting kind of impatient. I'm getting emails now from people accusing me, are you like a shill for them? Are you getting, you know, hush money or something like that? I mean, accusing me of like not commenting on them because I'm being compensated to not bash them or whatever. That's not the case, I assure you. It's just taking longer because I want to make sure I got my facts straight. And the kind of the tough questions that I have, I want to give them a chance to answer them before I comment publicly. I've put the call out now to do an interview with somebody at corporate. I've been told late July is the earliest they can do it. I've asked if there's anyone else at corporate that can kind of get on the show with me and talk to me about it. That is still pending. You know, I'm gonna give them a few more days. If they don't want to participate, I'll go with what I got. And I'm not going to wait much longer. But I'm still holding out hope that we can get this done, and I think we can. So that is coming up. That'll be the next show, one way or the other. Either interviewing them or me just making my case with what I've got. That'll be the next show. So look forward to that one, and probably a few other little things too, because I don't think that one's going to take that long. There's some other interesting things going on in the industry. So anyway, thanks a lot for hanging in there for this long with this whole kind of binary defense. I would love to get your feedback on it. If you think anything I've missed or something I should have added, you know, let me know. By the way, I do have a new website that's being built. It's a kind of a video or audio blog website where you're going to have the opportunity to actually comment on the articles and the show, that the Inside Network Marketing show and so forth, and I can respond to your comments and things like that. So look forward to that probably in the next few days as well, and this will all be posted there. But in the meantime, you can always, just, of course, just email me at mwave1@cox.net. It's on the website. So again, thanks a lot for indulging me for the next probably something like hour and a half, and I will see you here on the next show. All right, thanks a lot, everybody. Have a good week.